Welcome into the National Hour, the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. I'm Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, David Sis, Boom Ba. Oh, it's Jake today. Who's Jake?
Jake?
The snake?
I can't keep track up there.
Hi, Jake. It's Welcome Jake. Aboard, buddy.
And Jake Schultz, I think is the last name.
Jake Schultz.
Jam-packed this hour as going to get right into the Edmonton Oiler win last night over the Vancouver Canucks with Jason Gregor, host of the Jason Gregor Show on Sportsnet 1440 in Edmonton. In the meantime, a friendly reminder, this hour Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365, and also in about 40 minutes, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, newly
minted.
Announced.
Minted.
Minted. Yeah. Craig Berube will also join us as well. But in the meantime, no real surprise last night for both of you before we get it to Jason?
Well, I mean, you go to game seven. I don't think there's any definite outcome. So it ended it the way I thought it would in the end, but Vancouver certainly gave a much better push than I thought they would.
I feel for the Vancouver fans because that team just losing Besser. It just wasn't there the way they'd played the whole playoffs. Tough.
All right, let's welcome him in, Jason Gregor. 1440 in Edmonton, host of the Jason Gregor Show. Nobody cares in Edmonton about Vancouver, like Sammy's alluded to. Right, Jason?
Well, maybe not anymore. I think they cared about him for a short time. I will say Oilers fans were very classy when the Brock Besser news came about. They kind of put aside the rivalry to said, hey, blood clots are pretty serious, so you wish him well.
Well, however it happens, you just want to get through. So we'll ask you for your take on Game 7. Maybe a little bit more exciting at the end than it should have been, considering what seemed like it might just be a sleepy way through for a win for the Oilers.
Well, the Oilers had the game in control until Ryan McLeod decided to just not shoot the puck.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm sorry. Like that changed the whole game. Like if you look at it, Vancouver had in that third period, and you knew they were going to come. They're desperate, so they get a power play. They had two shots, nothing serious. They didn't have a shot on goal 5-on-5. Now, they'd miss some shots, and Edmonton had blocked them. And then on a simple dump-in, Skinner comes out, plays it, puts it up to Desharnais, who puts it right on McLeod's tape. He has time. All he's got to do is flip it out, and he just missed it. And both you guys played. Like, mistakes are going to happen in a game, but when a coach benches you for one mistake, it's rarely one mistake. I think is kind of cumulative for McLeod. I don't think they've liked his competitiveness in the series. And, that play is just, it's inexcusable at that time of the game. And it gave Vancouver life and, made the last 8.5 minutes of that game much more stressful than it probably should have been. Because up until that point, Vancouver had really generated nothing.
And that, to me, is a huge story on a team where we, at times during the regular season, Jason questioned whether or not they'd ever have the ability to hold any team at a handful of shots for a good chunk of a hockey game. But that's exactly what happened. And, we'll get into Evan Bouchard's historic offense ability here and the numbers that he's putting up. But even for a guy like that to show the ability to shut down teams, did anybody really see that, especially last night coming into a game seven?
Well, if you look at the orders, actually, since Chris Knobloch's come in, Edmonton has been like a top five team in high danger chances against. Everybody looks at Edmonton and think of Draisaitl, McDavid, and rightfully so, and Zach Hyman's a 50-goal scorer, and Evan Bouchard is an 80-point defenseman. But, Edmonton overall is actually pretty good. If you look at Sportlogic's numbers, Edmonton is number one in high danger chances against in the NHL playoffs. And they're number one in expected goals against. The problem is they still, and if you had a ranking for number one in gift goals, I'm pretty sure they'd be there too. And that, to me, has always been their issue. They'll play well for long stretches, and then boom, it's like you have the game completely in control, and there's no reason to make that giveaway. Stuart Skinner and early in the series let in some goals that really had no business going in, and I call those gift goals. And if Edmonton, if they can reduce those, they'll have a really good chance. But, against Dallas, who's a really deep team, I don't know if you can get away with giving away games like Edmonton did in this series to Vancouver. It never should have gone seven games. Edmonton was the better team by far. outside of Game 5. Game 5, the Canucks full marks for their win. But that, to me, is going to be the question mark moving forward, guys, is can Edmonton eliminate their self-destructive mode that always seems to rear its ugly head?
Yeah, that's the, you know, I am curious before moving on, looking ahead for the Oilers, to talk a little bit about why that series was closer than someone like me expected. I thought that this was going to be, I forget if I said five or six games, but I thought that they were heavily outclassed. Was it just not getting the goals from the depth, too much using McDavid and Draisaitl? What to you was the main cause? Maybe the goaltending is sort of assumed, but were there other things to diagnose and say, okay, we can patch this for the next round?
Well, you'd like some production from your third line, sure, but realistically, Edmonton scored enough goals to win the series. Like, Game 3, I felt like their 5-on-5 scoring early in the series wasn't good enough. I don't think they generated enough traffic in front of Shelovs, and that changed in Game 6, and then, you know, they scored a few more 5-on-5 goals in Game 7. And, you know, and then other guys started to chip in, but really, you know what, blowing a lead, like, all three games they lost, they had a lead. Right, they were up 4-1 in Game 1 with 26 minutes left.
Yeah.
You shouldn't lose that game. And then they lose Game 3 by outshooting them 45-18. And, you know, Skinner allowed 4 goals on 15 shots in 40 minutes and then got pulled. So, honestly, I think it was that, really. Like, depth scoring's nice, but it's at times I think it's a little bit overrated. I've been looking up teams who win, and not surprisingly, guys, it's the teams. Your best players are your best players. It's nice to get a key goal from a depth guy, and Cody Ceci suddenly Mr. Game 7 for the Edmonton Oilers. 2 goals in consecutive Game 7s for him, both the opening goals of the game. So, you know, those are nice, but ultimately I think you're going to win and lose with your best players, and that's what the Oilers did here at the end. Their best guys were great when it mattered most, and, you know, they'll need to be good against Dallas. Like, no doubt in my mind, Dallas is a much tougher opponent than they faced in the first 2 rounds.
We're talking to Jason Greger, host of the Jason Greger Show on Sports 1440 in Edmonton. So you just mentioned it, the fact that this did go 7 games. What's left out of the Edmonton Oilers to push against a Dallas Stars team that's sitting at home waiting and resting?
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because if you actually look at this series and you look at Dallas, Dallas has actually played one more game than Edmonton because they played 7-6, right? Oilers had their break earlier with winning in 5 and had a week off. So, yeah, you know what? They only have 2 days between games. But look at Dallas's, I think it's kind of been underreported. Dallas has basically played this whole playoffs with 5 defensemen, right? You look at Miro Heiskanen has played 311 minutes right now. Bouchard, who leads the Oilers, he would be 6th on Dallas in time on ice amongst defensemen. 6th, right? So they've gone with 5 guys. You know, they brought in Petrovic for 1 game, but, you know, him and Nils Lundqvist barely play. Hakanpää is obviously their number 6 guy, and I know he skated, but I don't think, by the sounds of it, he's not ready for at least the first 2 games of this series. So I don't know if fatigue's going to be much of a factor, to be honest. I'm really interested in the matchup here. We know that Lundell and Tanev, they like to use those 2 guys against, you know, the top line, Jack Eichel, Nathan MacKinnon. But Edmonton has McDavid's line, but then on their 2nd line, oh, they have the NHL's playoff leading scorer in Leon Draisaitl. And no offense to Casey Mittelstadt or Vegas's 2nd line center, they don't hold a candle to Draisaitl. So how are they going to manipulate their defense pairings as Tanev, who only played 52% of MacKinnon's minutes 5-on-5, you know, how much of that matchup is going to be? Because I think that's what it's going to come down to. Can Dallas stop Edmonton's top gunners? And can Edmonton just get consistent goaltending? They don't need great goaltending. They just need consistent goaltending.
Yeah. You know, one thing that caught my eye is the Oilers in points per game from their defensemen are first in the postseason, not surprisingly, when you have Evan Bouchard getting 20 points. But tell us a little bit about the D pairs, because early in the series, it was a bit of a story that maybe Nurse and CeCe were having some struggles. It seems like they kind of figured things out. Bouchard and Ekholm obviously do what they do. You know, I guess very impressed by Bouchard's numbers. You probably weren't surprised by that, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm surprised he got 20 points.
20's
like,
a
Bouchard's
lot.
Good offensively. and not only 20 points, guys, like 5 goals. in a series for a defenseman. And, well, I guess four, because they changed that goal to Hyman last night. But four goals, all 5-on-5, so, you know, not on the power play. And Bouchard's defensive game has really improved for me. Like, he's a really smart player. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to compare him at all to the player, but he defends similar to how guys like Lidstrom and Niedermeyer. They're not physical. They're not Chris Pronger. You know, they're not Stevens. You know, they're not Shea Weber. They're not beating the hell out of you. That's not how he defends. He defends more with his brain and with sticks and playing the angles. And, you know, really the only error he made in this whole series was in game five, where he just, you know, mishandled the puck, which is a bread and butter. So it wasn't even a bad read or losing a battle. And I think Bouchard's really played well. But I give Paul Coffey credit. He switched the D pairs after game four. He put CeCe with Kulak, and then he put Nurse with Desharnais. And Cody CeCe in game 5, 6, and 7 wasn't on the ice for a goal against 5-on-5. He scored, obviously, the goal in game 7. And he played the second most minutes 5-on-5 of any order defenseman after Bouchard. So, you know, the pairing switch seemed to have worked for Edmonton. You know, they got a little bit different matchups. Now, granted, it's not like Vancouver is a really dangerous offensive team. They didn't really challenge guys. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you can't win in the playoffs playing that way. I know that Besser got, obviously, the blood clot, and that doesn't help. But, you know, and Elias Pettersson was on a milk carton somewhere, missing in action. But I just don't think you can win in the playoffs when you don't attack in today's NHL. And I think Edmonton will see now, because Dallas, they come at you in waves. They got three lines that can score. Not to the level of Edmonton, but they got three balanced scoring lines.
So, Jason, is that it? Just maybe reshuffle the deck with the pairs for Bouchard, or did he need a coaching change, or like where does it truly matter that, or where was it the trigger point on going to another level for this guy?
Well, last year it started, I think, and it helped. Like he's and you guys, I think sometimes a lot of people overlook having an experienced partner. It started with Duncan Keith in 2022. Right. And Bouchard raved about all the little tips that Keith would give him in games that most coaches just can't give you at that point. Right. And some can never give you that point. Like, Keith's a Hall of Famer. He, you know, he understands the position. And then they brought in Matthias Ekholm, and, you know, he kind of calms down, and Bouchard just keeps developing. It's only his third full season, and he's a great offensive player. He's actually a very smart player, and he's improved his just, you know, kind of urgency at times, right? Like, that guy can sit back like he's in a rocking chair back there. He'll stick handle through three guys, and he never panics, which is a great thing to have, but sometimes you want him to be more urgent. But I really think when Paul Coffey came in, he changed the entire makeup of the blue line. Like, Bouchard, what's his skill set? Moving the puck. And he was always good at it. But he made Vincent Desharnais, Cody CeCe, Darnell Nurse, and said, every one of those guys, we're not just dumping the puck out anymore. Right, we're looking to make plays. And he actually really ripped his team. I think it was in game 5 where his defense was flipping the puck up the ice. He's like, that's not how we play. We make plays. And it really plays into Bouchard's game. And obviously, I think learning from a guy like Coffey, who's a Hall of Famer, who probably gets underrated for his acumen of understanding the position of defense. Yes, he's one of the greatest offensive guys, but he does understand how to play the game in the defensive zone. And he's just challenged Bouchard. And Bouchard says, man, like, when Paul Coffey's sitting there and telling you you can do something and showing you videos of what you can do, you're like, God, I guess I can do it. And so I really think Paul Coffey gets a lot of credit, and Chris Knobloch, because some head coaches, guys, don't necessarily want to really empower their position coaches. And he did with Coffey, he did with Stewart on the PK, and he did with Glenn Gullison, obviously not touching anything on the power play.
So when you look at, you know, sort of tiers of talented players, it's obviously crucial to have guys behind the best guys. RNH, 16 points in 12 games. I think Hyman's above a point per game, too. You know, those guys coming through maybe makes the difference. Were you impressed with those guys' ability to continue to produce even when maybe McDavid or Draisaitl pulled back a bit?
Well, Zach Hyman's been good all year. He's got 11 goals to lead the playoffs, right? Like, he's excellent around the crease. He had 54 goals in the regular season. You know, Nugent Hopkins, I really thought he came on in the last few games of this series. Historically, he hasn't been a really productive player 5-on-5 in the regular season, and really not in the postseason outside of 2022, right, where he had 5 goals, 5-on-5. But he came alive here late, and they really needed him. He scored 2 huge goals here in the last 2 games, both 5-on-5, and I think that's massive for them. Now, Nugent Hopkins, Hyman, and McDavid, they've been aligned for the majority of the year. They did get away from it for a bit, but I think they're better that way. And Dylan Holloway's emergence allowed them to go Kane and Draisaitl together with him, and now they got their set top six, and I wouldn't change it at all against Dallas. Now, they give Draisaitl, McDavid, and Hyman that first shift after a Dallas power play all the time, which I'm fine with, but I would leave Nugent Hopkins there. They needed him to go to the net guys more, and he did that specifically in game six to score from around the crease. You know, Hyman lives there. But, yeah, those depth guys are good. Kane scored two goals in game five and six. You know, Dylan Holloway scored maybe the best goal for the Oilers in the playoffs in game six. So their depth guys did, I guess their second-tier depth guys, did step up here in the final two games when they needed them to win the series.
You know, Jason, Vancouver, obviously, disappointment, the fans. But there's a sense that they won their fans over. There's plenty to look forward to. The build, the excitement. Where would the Edmonton fans be at this point going through a series with Dallas where probably not favored, maybe? I'm not sure where it stands, but, like, is this from here on in for Edmonton fans cup or bust here? Or is there a sense that getting close is still okay?
Yeah, I would guess most fans are like, no, like, let's go. Right now, Leon Draisaitl said cup or bust, and then he's kind of like, hey, maybe that was a little bit too much. But I think they, like, if the Oilers get swept in the conference final, guys, it they'll be like, well, what the hell's the point? You know, if you lose in overtime of game seven, you know, maybe it's a little bit, all right, we're competitive and we'll see what happens. But no, I think they look at their team and they were the best regular season team since Chris Knobloch took over. They had the most points. They were second in goals. They were top five in goals against. They were top five in penalty kill. They're top five in power play. There's really no reason for them, as good as Dallas is, you know, Edmonton should go in there and say, hey, we should be able to compete. That's why they went out and got these guys. Now, you know, Adam Henrique, I think, it could be a wild card in this series. I don't think he's going to be ready for game one, guy, but if he's ready for game two, three, or four, that adds some depth to them because their third line has really done nothing offensively in this series. And with Dylan Holloway's emergence, you could move him there and maybe that jumpstarts some things. Their fourth line's actually been more productive than their third line. So I think there is a lot of expectations inside the organization and amongst a fan base, and I think it's fair, right? Like, they played that well for this long. You and I know that doesn't guarantee you success in the postseason, but they've had some learning, right? They went to the conference final, got beat by a very good Colorado team. Then they lost to Vegas last year. So they've been a good team. Like, there's no more, well, we have to learn. It doesn't mean you'll win, but I don't think the Oilers, like, the McLeod goal, the Stuart Skinner goals, those glaring gift goals, they just can't happen in the conference final, I think. And so that's what I'm going to be watching for. Because I think if Edmonton can play a mature game, guys, they're right there. And this should be a hell of a series, right? Rupe Hintz's injury is something that I think is a big storyline for Dallas heading into this series. But, you know, we'll see how they can do it. And it's funny because, you know, Edmonton, if you look at all their numbers, they're actually way better defensively than people think. The problem is, they make those glaring errors, so I guess maybe that's why they're not that good, because they still make them. But overall, if you look at shot suppression, shots on goal, scoring chances, they don't give up a lot. Their goals against should be better if they just get decent goaltending.
Well, we'll move from what could happen, what should happen. What do you think will happen? Do you feel comfortable making a prediction yet, or have you not run all your proper analysis?
You know what? I actually had both of these teams at the start of the playoffs in the Western Conference Finals, so I'll go with the team I thought at the start of the playoffs, which was Edmonton. And so I said Edmonton in seven, and so I'll kind of stick with that. McDavid, like, when your best players are that good, it just gives you such an advantage. And I'm very excited to see Miro Heiskanen, you know, Heiskanen and Bouchard, because I'm not saying he's a better player, but in the series, Bouchard was infinitely better than Quinn Hughes. And now Bouchard and Heiskanen, both guys got five goals, right? Like, that's the storyline to watch. Yeah. You know, young Wyatt Johnson, oh my goodness, what a player that guy's become for the Dallas Stars. Their amateur scout manager getting a massive raise with Stan Coven and all those guys. Are you kidding me? Like, look at their drafting in Dallas. It's amazing here the last 6 years. It's stunning how good it is. So I think it's going to be a great series. It really comes down to, can Stuart Skinner just be consistent? I don't think he has to be great. He just has to be consistent.
Great storylines going into this one. Jason, terrific stuff, man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, boys, have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Jason.
Jason Gregor. Sports 1440 in Edmonton, and it's the Jason Greger Show.
It's going to be a good series, boys.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of history between these two teams. There was like my youth. Yeah. They used to play in the first round every year, and they would be like the closest sweeps ever. Hey, I remember like every game would go to OT, and Dallas would win every time. And they'd get swept all the time.
Yeah.
I know we're going to go to game time.
But, yeah.
Very disappointing game watching it from a Vancouver Canuck perspective for at least, you know, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
but they can't
generate. They couldn't get anything going, yeah. And the power play sunk them. It was like
that 4-minute power play was devastating.
Did they call Guy Boucher and say, hey, can you give us some pointers here? Like, was that?
That game seven, boys. I've watched that game seven a lot of times. It just felt so leafy. And I'm sorry to my Canuck fans. It's in the second round, so it's not leafy because it was in the second round. Yeah. But just the inability to even get in the zone or create like zone time or have chances, like they could not get to the middle of the ice.
It is devastating. Part of, you know, there is luck involved, and the Leafs obviously didn't have their guys. But, you know, to not have Besser and Demko in that game, like Shelov is not to blame. That's not why they didn't win the game.
Well, he started out with like a ridiculous save.
Five or six, nothing.
He was great.
Without him.
But, you know, a couple of shots from the point get through. He seems to struggle seeing through screens right now, and maybe he'll find that. But
before we move on, one thing happened Saturday night, game six, I want to ask you guys about. And the guys on Hockey Night in Canada pointed it out, and it was JT Miller just giving it to Dakota Joshua on the ice. Do you recall that?
Yeah.
And I know the guys liked it a lot, but I did not like it at all. And I just wanted to get your thoughts.
What didn't you like about it?
What did I not like about it? I didn't like... I didn't like a guy chewing out a teammate in front of 18,000 fans and millions watching. That's what I didn't like about it.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I typically think that it's okay to be upset and time and place and all that, but that didn't feel quite on to me.
Yeah, and you know how I feel about JT Miller.
You love Miller. You're a Miller guy.
And I didn't like him for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Because I heard stories like that.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that JT Miller was wrong in maybe the message that he was trying to get across to Dakota, whether it's, hey, get a puck in deep. We can't turn it over there. You know, that's a critical time. That's a critical moment. Let's whatever the message he needed or wanted to send, I think there's a million ways you can say the same thing to him without embarrassing him in that instance.
Well, I mean, a guy like him also deserves a lot of credit for the way that he pushes his teammates to get them where they got. So, yeah, I can see the good and the bad of it.
It's not that – it is a big deal, but it's you know, he's made so many strides in being a great leader and a teammate. But, you know, there are players, you know, that I've played with that were in that similar situation to JT Miller, they would never do that.
Yeah.
They would never never belittle a guy like that in front of everybody. It would be done
in the room.
In the room. But at that moment, there's the same way to get the same message across, but with building blocks, not with stripping a guy down.
Yeah. And it's clearly cumulative.
Cumulative has been a tough word.
Cumulative. Oh, Jesus. Because it wasn't the play that that happened wasn't like super egregious. Like the puck kind of came out and he used to kind of, the guy made a good play with his glove. But I think when you live by the sword, die by the sword with JT Miller, where he's just a complete hothead, you're going to have to deal with that kind of thing.
You're absolutely right that it wasn't a critical play, but what it projects is the level of frustration that you're having and the lack of success that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that, and I listened to the guys, and, you know, they had their takes. Kevin Bieksa had his take, as well as Luke had his take that, you know, there's reasons why they liked it. I said to myself, that tells me that things are kind of derailing a little bit. Bubbling. Mm-hmm. And if I'm an Edmonton Oiler guy and I'm watching that go on, I go, boys, we got him.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. my junior coach was so good with the whole never let him see a sweat thing. We're not slamming doors. We're not, you know, we can still hold each other accountable without that sort of stuff where the other team goes, oh, they're reeling.
Yeah. And they were reeling because
they were reeling.
Like even they tied that game early in the in game six, and it was Hoglander scored that goal and Pettersson had a little bit of jump. But it just felt that, like, you guys both picked Edmonton. Yeah. I picked Vancouver. I thought Vancouver had a little bit more gumption than Edmonton.
They make it close, man.
And I honestly give Tocchet a ton of credit because them coming back in the third period yesterday, like, they were getting beat like a drum for 52 minutes of that game. And the fact that they even had that push at all when they're down three, it's like, give credit. Tocchet must just have tore a strip.
Well, he won Jack Adams, right?
Yeah. Did he win that?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Pretty sure that was announced over the weekend.
Congratulations to him.
I mean, well-earned. The Canucks were saying themselves everything has to go right for us to make playoffs, and they're, you know, a goal away in game seven of the second round from seeing the conference final. So hell of a performance.
That puck doesn't hit Zadorov when at the end of the game there. It's like, maybe they got game seven overtime, different story, but anyways, they couldn't hold on any longer.
Good season for the Canucks.
Absolutely. Game time?
Game time.
All right, it's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app, latest odds, and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So, Kipper, you were asking our good friend Jason Gregor who would be a favorite in that series. And the Edmonton Oilers are plus 110 in that series. So they're a bit of an underdog going up against the Dallas Stars. It's minus 130. And on the other side of it, the Florida Panthers are minus 150 favorites against the New York Rangers, plus 125.
What?
Yeah. I will say, looking at these lines, this is an awesome Final Four. And if you were going to decide, like, if these are probably the four best teams in the league. Like, there's no real fluke of anybody getting in there.
Well, three of them won their division, and the Oilers stumbled out of the
nobody's
gate.
Nobody's getting in the side door here. They all broke down the front door.
Yeah. They were a good start to finish, these four. Well, sorry, the Oilers being the exception again there.
So, slow. 15 games.
Yeah. So, two pretty tight series there, and Edmonton's underdog, which would probably be good for them. And just checking in on my favorite time to check in on, the Conn Smythe Trophy race here. Jake Oettinger is the favorite at plus 500.
The favorite. So, they think Dallas is going to win the cup.
Dallas is the favorite, according to Bet365, to win the cup. And if they think that, you know,
if he shows up, it's going to be hard for the Oilers. But
Brings up a great point about Dallas's D.
I'm not pleased with his consistency.
I think the biggest concern for Dallas is, can Chris Tanev play enough games? Like, he took a licking in round two.
How about him getting hit in the mouth?
Like, he's got no teeth. He's going to lose his gums. It's just going to be a nose and a chin.
I was just praying that they were going to get put out so that he's not half of a man when the Leafs sign him in the offseason. But he's just, like, taking
for
a beating.
For half the salary?
Oh, God. Three's half of eight. And so I'm just looking down the list here at the Conn Smythe guys. Two that I kind of like are Oilers. Evan Bouchard, 25-1. If he keeps ripping into the net at this pace, you know, I know probably McDavid if they are going to win. But, like, narrative, he's been good, so I don't mind that. And Zach Hyman, 50-1 to win the Conn Smythe. So if he keeps firing in the net, I think he leads the goal. Does he lead the playoff in goals? I think he does. So he's had a really good, and I mean, probably be a lot because of McDavid, so it'll be a tough one. But it's a long shot at 50-1, and maybe the writers like the narrative and they want to stick it to the Leafs. I mean, if there's anything that could make Leaf fans, like, heartbroken, it's literally a Zach Hyman Conn Smythe. So there's a couple long shots I like. A lot of goalies up there in the superstars, as you would expect. So that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
All right. We'll take a quick break.
Yeah.
We come back. Maybe we'll throw in a Rick Tocchet clip.
Yeah.
Jack Adams Award winner. And then we'll track down the new head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Craig Berube. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. The Kipper with Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. So, all said and done for the Vancouver Canucks. Just so weird. They just, these injuries that guys just, I don't remember it in my era where it's like, one second it's like, oh, he's not playing.
Yeah, you guys had bad medicine, so they didn't know, and they just trotted you out there.
A blood clot. Like, what are the odds?
I know. It's brutal. Just brutal timing. It reminded me of the Joseph Woll back, where you're like, here we go, big game seven. They're like, oh, actually, you don't have one of your best players. And you watch that 4-minute power play, and it was just...
I'm like, it can't be true.
And so Tocchet loads up the D. I think they had 4 D over the two power play units, two on each unit, and they still gave up a mile-long Connor Brown breakaway. Oof. By the way, Brown had a couple breaks. Just, he's an offensive guy. He had 120 points in the O, I think. This is the worst attempt... Connor, man, love you, but my God, was that an awful breakaway attempt.
Quick chest.
Jeez Louise. So,
when it's all said and done, what do you make of Pettersson with one goal in 13 games and, what, 7 points?
I thought he tried his ass off the last game or two. I thought game seven, he ran into people, he skated.
So good for him.
Like, is it still like in that Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Tavares? You're paid $12, $13 million. We don't care. You got to produce.
I believe that is, you have held them to that account, right? I do care, you know, if you're still playing and you're effective. And I thought he had back heel. And
I feel for these, like, great, you're rich.
Yeah.
But this is the way it's going to be moving forward here, like, for all of you.
Yeah.
All of you. Like, you don't produce, you are going to get crapped on beyond belief.
But Kip, it's never been a free pass for superstars to underperform in the playoffs.
No, it's worse now.
I'm sure.
It's worse now.
Yeah.
I don't want to say this too loud for the Vancouver people to hear, but Pettersson was worse than Marner has been.
Yeah.
I think. Don't you?
It's just, listen, I'll go back to, it's really hard out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
5-on-5. And if your power play goes south or you got an average goalie, you're done.
Yeah.
You're done. And you will take the heat.
But it's way harder for the Stars, for sure. But, you know, you look at the guys who get through, and every year, McDavid and Draisaitl, the zillion points in the playoffs, and every year MacKinnon has a bunch of points, and it's a different type of player that has success in the playoffs, maybe. And so maybe Pettersson and Marner and the, you know, more perimeter-type guys, maybe they shouldn't make as much money. Maybe they're not on the level of these guys who are bullies. And
no one's saying no.
I have no idea.
No one's saying no. I'm not blaming the player. But if I'm the teams, I'm having second thoughts about, yeah, that guy's...
But you're not getting him if you have second thoughts. You're not getting him.
Well,
he's going somewhere else.
Buddy, the Leafs could have had Marner for less than they gave him. Mikko Rantanen got 9.5 after Marner.
But Marner ended up being paid right where he was supposed to get paid.
Right, but that doesn't mean he got paid what they should have paid him.
Well, Matthews shouldn't have gotten past... Eichel in Buffalo. There's no reason why he should have been $2 million more than Eichel.
You talked
at 10
about
million.
Team jealousy in our first block, and that's what this is. But he did. He got that.
I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's the cycle. And no matter what, hey, good way to finish your check, Petey. But no one cares.
Did he have?
Tried
I literally
hard.
Just said I
you
cared.
Tried hard. No one cares. They're gonna run you out of the building. They're gonna run you out for not producing.
He has another way to play, Petey, right? Like, he can run into people and he can do, you know, that physical edge.
But
I thought he tried the last
one. $12 million, $13 million, these guys, it's like,
for sure it's short of
produce
expectations.
Or you gotta just suck it up.
Yeah.
I watched all their games closely. Like, I don't remember how many slot chances did Pettersson have.
No,
like, it felt
he wasn't
like he
in
was
there.
He never, like, even when he scored his goal, it was off, like, the sideboards where he just kind of shot into an empty net.
Every blocked shot was at the middle. Like, Vancouver couldn't get anything to the net.
Do you know
in
how
the first
many
40 minutes
of
it
their
was
shots?
Crazy.
Megan Chayka had a shot or a stat that the Canucks got 22% of their shots through in game seven. 22%.
Yeah. 22.
So they attempted, whatever, 60.
Oh, you
what's the math
it.
On that? 15 get
you
through? Like,
never got through to the net.
No.
Yeah. So that's perimeter, that's good D, protecting the house by Edmonton and all that, but I think it's becoming clearer that you need players who can get through there. Zach Hyman has 11 goals. Nichushkin had all the goals he had. Where are those guys getting the goals? It's not a mystery.
Hyman's skating, man. He's gotten faster too, like, just powerfully drops that shoulder. It's like, that's how
machine.
That's how you score in the playoffs. You have big, fast guys that go to the middle of the ice.
All right, let's go to Rick Tocchet. On how he feels overall about his team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no quitting this team. Obviously, you know, the third period, there's parts of the second, I thought there was no quit. Really proud of the guys. Unreal, you know. Nilsy get that shot gets through Z, that's in the net. I mean, you know, that would have been unreal. But yeah, made a huge push there. Really proud.
So I listened to this whole press conference and would not do any criticism. Like, it was just fully basically him being like, I'm proud.
Yeah. Wow. This is just because of where they came from. What did they miss the playoffs last year by? A dozen points?
Yeah, a lot.
It wasn't close.
Can you play the second clip for us quickly there, Derek? That second talk it clip? Okay. He's got the coach of the Leafs on the line, so he can't put the clip.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Berube's calling in here, I think. I don't know if he's ready yet, but he would just call in. So, that's why the... He's not ready yet, so
okay.
We don't have a clip, and our guy's talking to him on the phone. So,
all right,
carry on, Kipper.
We will momentarily be joined.
There you go.
Yeah, yes. we're gonna get Berube as soon as he's ready. But in the meantime, House Money. They were playing all season long with House Money, Vancouver, and this time next year, you lose in the first round, either in Game 7 or in overtime. People are going to be disappointed.
Hey, I'm curious to know what expectations are for the Canucks because I won't be going into it saying that's a 109-point team. All right.
Here you go.
Okay, let's welcome him in. 32nd head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs in their history, Craig Berube. Hey, Craig, thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
Guys, good. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
Listen, we caught your press conference today. Your answers were too short for us. We run a two-hour show every day, and you're going to have to beef it up, man. Don't do that to us.
Well, it's early. Give me some time.
How's the overall vibe for you? Again, from Friday, we assume that you agreed to a contract on Friday, and since then, it sounds like you've been rather busy.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Yeah, no, you're obviously busy and you know, people and phone calls and things like that. And, you know, just your family and then came out to Toronto here and it's been great. First class, you know, as you guys know, the organization's all first class. People have been great. Just really kind of getting the lay of the land and, you know, meeting a lot of new faces and, so it's been really good. Yeah, I mean, I'm loving every minute of it.
Well, that's awesome. And obviously there's a lot to do. As you mentioned, you know, you're finding places and getting to know people. At some point, things will slow down for you and you'll be able to get into the hockey side of things. So what will the process look like? How will you go about evaluating last year's Leafs and deciding what changes to make going into next season?
Yeah, well, those are conversations I'm going to have with Brad for sure here going forward about the team and, you know, just some of the changes that they made last year a little bit and even towards the end of the year going into the playoffs. And, you know, and then, you know, we'll get that all settled in and figure things out. And same with the coaching staff. And, you know, we'll go from there and see where we're at. And then, you know, we'll, you know, again, I've already reached out to a lot of players. I think that's important to really get these relationships going and get to know these guys. You know, there's a few here today at the rink that I met. So, you know, it's just things like that that I think are really important here.
We're talking to Craig Berube, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I know you mentioned that you've spoken to the majority of the players. That included Mitch Marner. What was the overall vibe when you talked to a guy of his stature with his future so much up in the air, Craig?
It was great. Very positive. You know, he was really excited. I'm really excited. Again, you know, all that stuff will be evaluated with Brad. And, you know, we'll go forward from there. But, listen, the conversation was great with him. Listen, he's a great player. We all know that. Like I said, it was very positive on both sides.
So the early season for the Leafs in the past has not been awesome. They typically kind of struggled out of the gate and as a result end up kind of finishing second, third, and never drawing a favorable first-round matchup. How early is too early do you feel to be holding guys accountable and leaning on players, kind of putting that pressure on that the regular season really does matter?
Well, I think that, you know, they know the regular season matters. We all know that. And you always want to get off to a good start, and that's important. I think that starts, you know, in the summertime with your training and all the things you got to do and get prepared. And then having a real good camp's important. And, you know, that's the plan now, to have a real good hard camp and get ready for the start of the season. I think how we run camp and with our practices, though the practices are the most important thing, not the exhibition games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to practice how we're going to play. We want to be really, you know, dialed in there, predictable with structure and how we're going to play. And I think that's, you know, that's going to be a big part of getting off to a good start.
Not to jump right through training camp or maybe the first 70 games of the regular season here, Craig, but there was a huge story towards the latter part of this season with the chase of Austin Matthews and 70 goals and just the overall thought about load management and, you know, relying on two or three of the core players all season long. Where do you stand on that sort of thing, on, you know, how much do you lean towards your top players, you know, from beginning to end of a regular season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I talked a little bit about it today with, you know, it's all about the team for me, and I think every player is important on your team, and he's got to have a role. And, you know, it's important for me as the coach to use all these guys and manage minutes and ice time and things like that. I think, you know, you're going to have to use your top guys more at times, obviously, when in games when you're down and certain things like that. It's all stuff that it's all a little bit hypothetical right now. You know, it's game to game. But again, I want to use everybody on the team. I really believe that, you know, if you want to ever get something done in the end, you need everybody. Everybody's got to feel important. Everybody's got to have a role.
Craig, over the years, I know that Dubas was a big analytics guy. I think you got about 43 R&D guys on staff and a bunch of different positions. You got a lot of staff there. How do you plan on approaching what I imagine is access to more information, or at least a fire hose of information that's going to be coming your way at some point?
Yeah, analytics have been around for quite some time now. We all use them.
Yeah.
They're all useful tools. I think, you know, as every coach is different on what he wants to use. You get loads of information, but, you know, as a head coach and the coaching staff, you know, you go through that stuff and you figure out what you think is more important than the other stuff, and mm-hmm. you use it. And, you know, like, I have my own stuff that I like to use. So, but again, it's all good information. You know, I don't think you can ever, like, just throw information out and not look at it. I think it's important you look at it and use what you want to use. But in the end, you know, I'm a gut guy. I go off a lot of feel things of what I see as a coach.
Craig, we're reminded during the playoffs what specialty teams mean this time of year. It's been ugly for the Leafs over the last few years in the latter part of a regular season or in their first or second round. Where are you on your power play, and how heavily involved are you on a power play? How much will you rely on whoever's there for you on your staff to be in charge of a power play?
Well, the way I work with my coach and staff is we're all involved in all these situations. That's what I believe is the most important thing. I don't think sure one guy's area is a power play and penalty kill and things like that. And, you know, they're heavily involved in that area, but I'm involved. The other coaches are involved. I think opinions are good. And that's kind of how I work through these things, because, you know, the penalty kill guy might have some good opinions on the power play. He's running the penalty kill. He knows what penalty killers are doing. So we all work together on all these things and come up with the best plan.
Makes a lot of sense. Wanted to get your thought, just a general sort of thing, and not maybe specific to the Leafs, but obviously we can sort of translate that a little bit. What does leadership mean to you on an NHL team?
Well, first of all good leaders are good teammates. Mm-hmm. Leadership is not just leading by example on the ice, but leadership is taking care of your teammates and helping them in tough situations, holding them accountable at times. You know, for me, that's leadership. You know, you take care of your teammates, you look after your teammates. That's really important. That's what I think leadership is.
Craig, we assume it may be a busy off season. Do you plan on being involved with decision making on player personnel, or as a coach, do you just work with what's given to you?
Well, no, I'm just talking with Brad. You know, we're both going to talk and be involved in these situations. But in the end, he's the general manager and I'm the coach. And, you know, his management team will make decisions. But, you know, I've so far talking with Brad, you know, he's asked me about things. And I would guess I would continue to work that way.
How quickly do you think you're going to get sick of the media environment here, Craig? Are you there now?
Yeah, no. It's part of the game. Yeah, it's more here in Toronto, and rightly so. It's the Toronto Maple Leafs, so yeah. It's part of the job. And you know, I understood that coming in here, and I'm, you know, signing here with Toronto. So yeah. You know, that's part of my job.
So if Brendan Shanahan comes into your coach's office with all these thoughts and ideas on what you should do or say, do you just show him the video of you kicking his ass?
I don't know if I kicked his ass, but I mean,
you did. It's okay.
Well, listen, it's
you got a lot more goals than I ever scored, Kipper.
Yeah, me and you both, my friend. Me and you both. Well, listen, officially welcome to Toronto. Keep them coming, those Kippers Clippers for us, and we're looking forward to next season. Thanks for doing this, Craig.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, all appreciate right. your time. Thanks.
32nd head coach in Maple Leaf history, Craig Berube. Hey, a lot longer answers with us than
good.
We saw this this morning.
Yeah.
I thought like the perfect length answer. You know, I've been doing a lot of radio.
We can work with this.
I've been working in radio for a long time now, and there's a very, like, perfect length of answer, and he kind of gave him there. It's kind of the perfect length.
I think what's really going to help him, too, is, like, he's experienced it as a player here.
Yeah.
Right? He is an alumni. He's got little blue and white in his blood.
I also don't think that there's anything that the media can do or say that's going to change his opinion of himself or his hockey team, which is a really strong place of like confidence to come at it from. Whereas I don't know that was the case with a first time head coach or with people who maybe a little more sensitive than Craig, who does not seem like an overly sensitive guy.
Let me ask it to you this way.
Yes.
Do you think if there was a documentary on the Toronto Maple Leafs, do you think Craig Berube would bust into the general manager's office and say, "We're getting killed in the narrative"? Do you think he would say that?
I think that's he might have said, today. I think he got on the ice and said, "Freddie, can you play?
Are you playing?
Yeah.
Hey, play?" I don't know. I got to tell you, boys, I love
that. I can't wait for that a new documentary with him.
Is there not one happening?
I don't know, but
I thought there was.
There's a drop on this show that we play a lot. Like, I might be back. I might be back.
What do you mean?
I might be back into loving the Leafs again.
Yes.
I might be back.
We're like 10 days from the end of the season and Sammy.
I'm back. Yeah, there it is. I might be back. Yeah. I don't know. I loved that interview.
Yeah. Good.
You're not going to find anyone that's followed this storyline that would not think today that he is not the perfect guy right now for here and now.
Yeah. Yeah. I am curious right now to know what happens to the staff, like the volume of staff. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, the whatever it is, 10 like guys. Well, the 10 guys they have in analytics. You know, he literally said the words, "I'm more of a gut guy," which is fine. That, he has things he uses.
You can hire 100 guys. They're gonna use what they want to use.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to pay them out of his salary, so he doesn't care if
just
they're
keep,
around.
Give me the report. And
just give me whatever you want and walk out.
Yeah.
And, you know?
You're right.
It's like there's so many coaches that get pages of that in between periods, and they wouldn't line the birdcage with it.
You're okay? Not wrong.
Once in a while, Kipper, you have a thing that gets me. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Birdcage.
You know, and I know that no coach is going to say, "I don't need numbers anymore." You know, and he was pretty good about, I think, walking that line. They're going to be fun
There's
to follow along.
There's nothing
with
right now between him and Brad Treliving that looks like they're going to let the numbers dictate decisions.
A little scary for me.
I will say, before we go, heartbreaking time of year. No hockey tonight, boys.
Is it the first night?
Yeah.
No, well, maybe one other night.
Yeah,
already.
No hockey tonight. Second round, one game a night. I miss the first
Suns
round
baseball
already.
Baseball starts up tonight. It's
Zigzags, big game for the Zigzags tonight. So
are the Jays back? Are you back on the Jays?
No, they stink.
They stink still?
I went and saw Manoah dealing on Sunday.
I mean, we'll let Blair and Barker, who's coming in after us, do all the talking. But
Chicago stinks too, right?
Oh, they reek. They're the worst team in the league by far, yeah.
It was the Rays I saw them beat.
Hey, that was good. Manoah looked good.
Hit one.
He did.
Miles
all right.
All right.
Encouraging
our final,
signs.
Our final two-hour show of the season just finished, and we've solved nothing.
Until Marner gets traded for Soros, and we'll be back on
Whoa!
For an hour.
See you then.
All right. Our thanks to Craig Berube, Jason Greger as well. We're back tomorrow from 3 to 4.
One Canadian team, go Oilers.
Eastern. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. If you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to get your feedback on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Have a great night, everybody.